Recorded live in Petone, New Zealand and Telluride, Colorado, this is the Cinematica Podcast, your weekly guide to what's on at the movies. You can find this and other episodes of the show at cinematica.co.nz. To season 2, episode 21 of Cinematica. I'm Dan Slevin, reporting to you live from Telluride in Colorado. And in the Cinematica studio are...
It's me, Simon. How you doing?
And Kaylee.
How you doing, guys? How you doing, Dan? How you doing?
I'm very... almost a different person to the person who was sitting in this chair a week ago. I have been on the most amazing journey in the last 7 days, and almost too many adventures to count.
Right. Yeah,
just brilliant.
So, you know, any entourage scenes, like meeting, you know, Cameron in the toilets or anything like that?
No, but I will tell you a great... this is one of the perfect Telluride stories. I went to the Mads Mikkelsen tribute event on Sunday night, which was preceding a screening of The Hunt, which I didn't want to see because I'd already seen it at the New Zealand Film Festival. So I needed to find a seat that I could sneak out of after the Q&A had finished. So I found myself a seat on the sides and... sat next to a distinguished-looking gentleman with a cane, and I said to him, this is a good seat. I can see from here, but I need to be able to sneak out before the film starts." And he said, "Oh, why would you want to do that?" And I said, "Well, I've seen it already. It played in Wellington earlier on this year, and to be honest, I didn't really like it very much, and I really didn't want to see it again." And he said, "Oh, why didn't you like it?" And I said, "Oh, you know, I didn't buy the premise." And he said, "Oh, that's interesting because I edited the film."
Nice work.
Yeah, nice work, exactly. But luckily we had about 15 minutes there to build a few bridges. I did say that you know, of course, your work was outstanding. But he said, "Well, obviously it wasn't outstanding, otherwise you would have loved the film more." But we talked about the whole premise of the film and what The Hunt was about and how New Zealand audiences might react a little bit differently to it, knowing, you know, having experienced the Peter Ellis case in Christchurch. And so we talked about that. And it was actually a fantastic conversation. He was a really interesting guy to talk to. And it was, you know, he wasn't offended or anything. He knows that people respond differently to films in different ways. And it was actually a classic Telluride exchange, a meeting of minds. So that gives you an idea about what this festival is like. You just don't know who you're going to bump into. I was at a Q&A for the film Barbara, and during that Q&A, the director of the film, Christian Petzold, said that he'd actually just come from an impromptu Q&A with five people in the gondola who'd all seen his film, and of course he couldn't escape for 12 minutes while he was travelling up to one of the other venues. And so, I mean, that's what it's like. As you wander around the town, you see people, and if you get a chance to have a chat, you do. Otherwise, there's no security. There's nobody's a big shot. People just you're just having a conversation, and if you see somebody like Salman Rushdie walking around, well, chances are, you know, if you don't have anything to actually offer, you'll just let him go about his business. So that's a little introduction. I suppose I should introduce today's show, shouldn't I? In today's episode, in addition to Telluride, we will review Maggie Gyllenhaal and Hugh Dancy in Hysteria, and the German World War II period piece movie set in the Ukraine. It's called Wunderkinder. We'll talk about my time here in the mountains of Colorado. But first, what's in the mailbag? Kaylee.
Well, speaking of Telluride and film festivals in general, Dan, you started a bit of a Twitter war between the Mirka Theatre of Common and Rocket Robot, who are all battling for space to be the next Cinematica representative at overseas festivals. So it turned into a pretty funny Twitter fight. I have to say I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, well, I just, you know, they're welcome to knock themselves out. If they go, they're happy to report. We'll take reports from anyone.
Adzabil said, "Briefly confused Colin Farrell and Colin Firth in my head, which made the Cinematica cast review of Total Recall very confusing and very interesting. I think if Total Recall was starring Colin Firth, I would definitely line up to see that. That'd be great."
Yeah, and I think that he's really not trying hard enough to break out of that art house ghetto.
Yeah.
Oh, gee.
And
pull your finger out. You've only got to. I mean, think about what Liam Neeson's done. Liam Neeson's gone straight into action B movies, and he's extended that career. He's punchy. You know,
and the world's a better place, isn't it, Dan? Movies and we're a bit for it, aren't we, Dan?
We are.
Right. And Miriam Ruth Ross, our lovely 3D expert and part of the Cinematica family, Moonrise Kingdom, two-word review, whimsical tween tale, and Robert Caddo followed that up with, it was like Stand By Me meets Eagle versus Shark, but I can't make that into two words.
Try harder. That's my word for
it's your
everybody.
Motto for life now.
Yeah,
try
it is. And so what's been going on while I've been away in New Zealand, Kaylee and Simon? What's the New Zealand top five?
Well, coming in at number five, actually opening at number five this week, is Moonrise Kingdom, which is a bit surprising. I thought it would open a bit higher up than that. Number four, down from one, Total Recall. Number three, Bourne Legacy, still hanging in there in the top three. Number two is Hope Springs. And number one, The Expendables 2.
Straight in there.
Yeah, Arthouse is dead.
Straight in. Boom.
But that's a pretty satisfying drop off for Total Recall, though, isn't it? To drop down to four after such a short, you know, what, one week in the charts. So, you know, I think that's a sign that word of mouth is, you know, pretty fair on a film that's, you know, frankly rubbish.
Mm. Yeah, but Dan, that's always the model, isn't it? You know, there's a 50% drop off usually in week two for a lot of those titles.
That's true, but, you know, it's dropped below Bourne, which has been out for longer, so.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
You know, the public speak, don't they?
That's very true from that point of view. But, Moonrise Kingdom, I don't know if it is that big a surprise. I mean, it played festival, had a bit hoovered up, so it's kind of, you know, that's probably where it would be.
It's true, although Moonrise only got one Wellington Film Festival screening, didn't it? So it's only 700 people that it could have taken out of the market.
Yeah, but all counts.
It does. It does. Indeed. And I'll tell you something that is interesting about being here at Telluride. It's noticing the similarities between this festival and the one that we're familiar with in New Zealand and the differences. And one of the similarities, I think, is the way that distributors use festivals to launch films. Now, here at Telluride, the venues are so small and it's so hard to get to that I don't think anybody's worried that a film will take out box office or distract from the box office, but it's still being used as a way to launch a film in the North American market. There are a good half a dozen of the films in the Telluride Film Festival that are being distributed by Sony Classics, and I got an email from them just yesterday with their release dates. So
Dan, just out of interest, what sort of size theaters are you in most of the time, and what's the capacity in there?
There are eight venues ranging from 650 to 130.
Right.
And the smallest one is, in fact, it's like a Masonic hall. So, you know, there's only one purpose-built cinema here in Telluride, the Nugget, which is 200 and something seats, and it's a classic old one-screen cinema with like a wooden floor, and it's a little bit like the Paramount in the sense that it's obviously a beloved theatre, but is past its best. But the biggest venues are actually conversions. The Galaxy Theatre, which is 500 seats, is an absolutely amazing conversion of an elementary school gymnasium. You would just simply wouldn't get it. If it wasn't for the fact that you could look down at the floor and see the midcourt basketball markings on the floor, you would never know. It's just absolutely transformed with black curtains and decoration and stadium seating, temporary stadium seating, and that's a full DCP compliant venue.
Yep.
The Palm is the Performing Arts Centre at the high school, which is 650 seats, so that's on two levels, and that's also DCP and has permanently installed 35mm. So the venues are and the Sheridan, which is kind of nuts, is the Sheridan Opera House as part of the Sheridan Hotel is 230 seats on two levels, and it's you if you you can imagine dancing girls having just left the stage. You know, it's a classic Western sort of variety house, really, and again temporarily fitted out for cinema with 35mm and digital.
So in a way, it's more of a media launch pad than a festival. It's more a way of, you know, getting the right people there and then launching it via the Twitter sphere.
Yeah, there's a bit of that. It's about buzz, definitely. It's not a competitive festival. There are no prizes, no silver. What would you call it? No silver elk or whatever.
But more of an industry type event.
Yeah, very much industry and incredibly well supported by sponsors. And so the box office, you know how Bill every year at the New Zealand Festival talks about how 80 to 85% of the New Zealand Film Festival revenue comes from box office. Well, that's not the case here. The town of Telluride itself has a population, a sort of tax-paying permanent population of about 2,500, with another 2,000 up the hill at Mountain Village. And it pretty much only doubles for the film festival. And maybe 150%, maybe there's about 4,000 people attending for the film festival. And a lot of those people have guest passes. A lot of those people are here with the films. And there's not that many that are actually here as paying customers. And you can tell who people are because everybody's got their passes around their necks. Everybody's got different coloured lanyards. And so you can see that the blue people are here with films. The people with yellow press and the green are the staff. And there's an enormous number of staff. There's something like over 500 paid staff working this weekend on the festival. There's dozens of people at every venue and of course a huge number of technical support people. I paid a visit to the office where the whole thing is set up, and they've got like a canteen so that they can feed everybody. It's just a massive operation, and for those of us that know New Zealand, it's completely mind blowing how this thing works.
A bit like picking it up and putting it in Awakuni.
Well, yeah, it is a little bit like that. Telluride is a box canyon in the middle of the mountains, and it's not going to grow. You know, the town itself can't grow. They've actually the suburb above Telluride, Mountain Village, is full of these incredible ornate massive mansions that are only. That are only inhabited sort of during the winter months, usually because they're various incredibly rich people's second homes. And a lot of you'll be interested in this, Simon. A lot of Telluride is for sale at the moment because of the economic downturn. People are flicking their second houses on. There are a lot of real estate signs.
I'm there, Dan.
But in fact, there's a lot of discounting going on. So I saw there was one real estate agent's window which had, you know, one third off a lot of these properties, which basically means things are dropping from 4 million to 3 million to sort of 2.5 million.
Right. Well, you snap up a few. Just get us a few for the weekend. Just sign away, Dan. Sign away.
Kick year next year, and we should, all three of us, we should get a house and rent it and record the show live, all of us.
That sounds good.
So, do you want to hear about some of the films?
Yes, let's hear about the films. Dan, what have you seen? What has been the highlight of your program?
Look, I'm going to have to go in sort of in order, I think, because it's so hard to remember. You know, it's only a 4-day festival, sort of 3.5-day festival, and you end up, if you're going to make the best value out of it, you've got to watch 3 or 4 films a day. And so even thinking back to Friday is actually really difficult. Looking at my calendar, I saw Midnight's Children, the new film by Deepa Mehta, which is an adaptation of Salman Rushdie's novel. It's been long awaited. The novel was a Booker Prize winner back in the early 80s. And Deepa Mehta and Salman Rushdie were both in town to introduce that. This was effectively the world premiere, I think, on Friday night because it hadn't yet screened in Venice. And I have to say I was a bit disappointed with it, actually. It was 2 hours 20 minutes and felt like 3 hours 20. It had, I think, a little The script was written by Salman Rushdie himself, adapted from his own book, and I think probably it needed a third eye on it to just trim it a little bit more. And I think that it'll probably get a New Zealand release just based on the caliber of the people involved. But yeah, I've found it a little bit disappointing, that particular one. On Saturday morning, I went at 8:30 in the morning to a tribute to Roger Corman. He was getting his silver medal, and there was a screening of a documentary about him. And then for an hour or so afterwards, he answered questions from Leonard Maltin on stage, which was really good. I forgot to mention that the first film that I saw was actually a sneak preview on Friday afternoon, which was Ben Affleck's Argo.
Yeah.
Have you heard about that, Simon?
I sure have. I've been keeping an eye on that one, and that's you know, opening before Christmas here.
Oh, is it? Oh,
yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, I can tell you that it is going to go gangbusters. It is the best Hollywood film that I've seen this year. It's a brilliantly entertaining thriller with political overtones. It's also a brilliant Hollywood satire. And so, you know, there's a lot of laughs in there as well. Ben Affleck is his third feature film. At the Q&A here, I wasn't at, but I heard that he was very, very honest about what he considers to be the flaws in his earlier films now. This, I think, is a sign of somebody. It looks like a film that's been by somebody who's made 13 films, not three. It's a terrifically controlled, well-paced, brilliant script by Chris Terrio. And I would say that there's a really good chance that there'll be some award nominations for it, certainly for script. Not sure, it might be a little bit too commercial to pick up more than that, but it was a fantastic start to the festival, and to be in the same room as Ben Affleck as he introduced the film, that was a sign of, like, oh, right, this is how this works. Okay. So, yes, Argo, look out for it. If somebody offers it to you and you're a cinema owner, bite their hands off.
It's locked and loaded, my friend. It's ready to go.
Great. Back to Saturday. Yes, the Roger Corman, which was fantastic. Very interesting. I had my first experience on Saturday morning of not getting into something, which is a rite of passage here at Telluride. You queue for an hour and then you find that they've run out of seats and you have to go and find something else to do. So I missed out on Frances Ha, which is Greta Gerwig and Noah Baumbach's new film.
Oh, you've seen us a photo of their backs. So you kind of...
I did see them as I was walking around town, and it's actually pretty. It's considered to be pretty gauche to just photograph the celebrities as they're wandering around. You know, it's they're price, all supposed to be normal citizens.
Yeah, it's the price they pay. I mean, you know, just snap away.
Yeah, yeah, no, I didn't get too many photographs of celebrities. I considered, not to try and interrupt their weekend. But I did see those guys around. And I missed out on their film until almost the very last afternoon, on Monday afternoon, when they'd all gone, in fact. So that was that. The one day, I'm not sure if we're going to have time for it today, but one day I will explain the queuing system for getting into stuff here at Telluride. It is insane. If incredibly frustrating, and it means you cannot plan anything, really.
Is it like going to a multiplex? Is it similar to that? You know, the corridors of queue lines and tape and then barriers, and then you turn left here.
Yeah, I'll briefly explain it to you. So what you've got is you've got this really complex hierarchy of people with different kinds of passes, and different people are allowed in first at different times, and... So if you're just an ordinary pass holder, you have to wait until all the patrons, the sponsors, the guests, and the who are they called? The show ring, the major legacy donors, they all get seated first, and then you get seated, and you stand around for an hour waiting with a laminated card with a number on it, which supposedly allows you to move out of the queue and go and use the bathroom or something.
It's like being in a deli.
Yeah, number 21. Step right up.
But sometimes you have to wait for longer than the film themselves in this queue under a marquee, and it seems like it's incredibly inefficient, and it seems like it's incredibly labor-intensive, but it's actually a really big part of the culture of Telluride. Because you're standing around in queues, you are forced to talk to people, and you get to meet people, and you have conversations, and you learn about what other people are doing, and it's a brilliant way of bringing people together, and you bump into people later on that you were standing next to in the queues, and you ask them what they've seen, and it does mean that you can't just stand there for an hour and not have a conversation. At the media briefing at the very beginning of the festival, Tom Luddy, the co-director, actually made a joke about possibly banning cell phones in the queues as well as in the cinemas, just to force people to have conversations. It's crazy, but it sort of makes sense. It's like the Soviet Union, the queuing. It's crazy. Interesting, the show ring people who get seated first at any given session and who also are thanked among all of the sponsors at every single session, they pay $25,000 a year for the right to be in that category of donor, and they have to commit to a minimum of 5 years.
Wow.
So, yeah, they can sit down first, I reckon.
Yeah, they've entered.
Have. It's incredibly well supported and well sponsored, but that 25 grand a year, boy.
Mm.
So I didn't get into Frances Ha. And then I went to Barbara, which is a film that had already screened at the New Zealand Film Festival, but I'd missed, and went to see that fantastic film, very much very German, very slow moving, static, but brilliant performances and very telling script, and the Q&A after that was also very interesting with the director, who if you haven't seen the film, this may not mean very much to you, but I think it was a really interesting insight into it. And somebody asked about the ending and to what extent the ending was planned, and he said we shoot in chronological order, and so by the end I let the actors decide the ending. I left the room and just left the cameras running. And he said, I didn't know what we'd got until afterwards. It was just—it's just a little brilliant moment, the kind of thing that you can only get from a really well managed and insightful Q&A process. So that was really good.
And that's getting a bit of awards buzz, isn't it, Dan? That's getting momentum.
It's the German Academy Award entry.
Mm.
And I think that it's going to have to be something flash, isn't it, to take that award off Amour, which we know is just a stone cold masterpiece. Amour was playing here, and I didn't see it because I'd already seen it in Wellington. But you know that you've got it's going to be a very tough race, definitely. Then moving on to Sunday. Crikey, Sunday was a big day. Again, really early starts. At 9:30, I watched a new film called At Any Price by a director called Ramin Barani, who I really like. And that's his first studio-funded film with a professional cast. And Dennis Quaid was there with him to introduce that. Big disappointment, the film, though, unfortunately. So I suspect that won't be getting a New Zealand release. I just can't imagine. It's about the Midwest of America and farmers doing it tough and genetically engineered corn and the big business and what have you. And it has very bold ambitions, but doesn't really work. And I found myself thinking all the way through it, like, you know, why doesn't he just build a baseball diamond? You know, that's worked in the past. So At Any Price was a bit disappointing. But it was nice to see Dennis Quaid, as you know, my only chance to. And then a really terrific film by Michael Winterbottom called Every Day. Is this on anybody's distribution list for New Zealand yet, Simon?
Not that I've come across, no.
Right. Well, this is Michael Winterbottom in his sort of experimental low-budget mode, and it's a brilliant idea, actually. He was wondering why it is that, you know, when you try and show film showed the passing of time, how difficult it is to actually sort of demonstrate. And so what he's done is that this film has actually taken 5 years to shoot because he wanted to show the real kids in the film actually growing up. And it's about a guy who's in prison and his wife and their four kids trying to cope while they're on the outside and he's on the inside. And it sort of just goes back on a sort of annual basis to see how how they're getting on. So it's kind of a documentary feel, but it is a drama. John Sim plays the guy in prison, and the four kids are all siblings who were found. And it's a terrific film. I found it incredibly moving. It pushes lots of buttons for me. Not everybody here felt the same way. Maybe it's my English background. Maybe I could sort of get the culture of it. But I think it's definitely one to look out for. Whether it's big enough to get a commercial release or whether it'll just be festival fodder next year, don't really know. Jeff Dyer, the English author, was the guest director of the festival this year, and so he got to program 8 films that he chose, which is what a cool thing to do, to be able to choose a whole strand of a festival of anything you want, basically. And I think that's it'll be an interesting idea for Bill at the New Zealand Festival to pick up on. I only saw one of his films, which was the 1992 film Baraka, which was screened in 70mm, which was just fantastic. Then we've already talked about Mads Mikkelsen. I then saw The Iceman, which is a sort of mafia thriller based on a true story, which again was a real disappointment. I can't see that one getting a decent New Zealand release.
It's not the sequel to Top Gun.
It just seemed to me not strong enough. I've been given the wrap up sign across Skype. Yes, I'll go as fast as I can. What else? Oh, the two fantastic documentaries. Probably I should just wrap up with these, actually. Two fantastic documentaries. Sarah Polley's Stories We Tell, which is about her discovering relatively recently, about 5 years ago, that her father is not her father, and that she was actually the result of an extramarital affair that her mother had. And when you watch this film, her other two films become it shines in a really interesting light on her two feature films, Away From Her and particularly Take This Waltz, which we reviewed here just recently. So I think that this film is absolutely amazing. It's getting massive awards buzz. She was incredibly interesting and insightful at the Q&A. I can't wait for you guys to see it, actually. I think that you'll love it as much as I did. And, I hope that it gets a general release, although, you know, the timing of these things might mean that it has to wait for a festival before it gets launched. Yeah, fantastic. The other great documentary was called The Gatekeepers, which is about the Israeli security service Shin Bet. And the director managed to get incredibly honest interviews with former directors of the Israeli security service, talking about their methods, talking about the ideology, and basically ripping their guts out of Israeli security policy and saying, in no uncertain terms, that it doesn't work and it won't work and it can't work. And these guys, they were at the very heart of Israeli security policy, and there they are basically saying this can't continue. It's a fantastic film, and that is also getting a lot of buzz in terms of awards contention, and I can imagine that one getting a big, you know, a lot of interest out of audiences in New Zealand as well.
Awesome. Thank you, Dan. Now, yes, we have to wrap up and move on with the rest of the show because we're at the 30-minute mark, so let's power through.
Okay, time for some news.
Yes, so Ryan Gosling has announced his directorial debut with his fantasy noir, How to Catch a Monster. The film will star Mad Men's Christina Hendricks as a single mother trapped in a surreal future city. The film is up for international pre-sales at the Toronto International Film Festival, which begins on Thursday. It's the end of an era for Australian arthouse cinema as Frank Cox announced this week that he is leaving Hopscotch, the company he co-founded in 2002. Cox has been a distributor since 1976, founding New Vision Films back in 1983. Hopscotch was sold to Entertainment One in 2010 and will continue to be managed by co-founder Troy Lum. Simon, we cut to you for commentary.
Oh, look, you know, I mean, it's just, the sands of time keep, tracking away. I mean, it's he did a lot for the Australian industry. I mean, interestingly, that one of their more recent releases through the Hopscotch distribution network is Sapphires, which has opened massively in Australia. So these guys, I must say, Troy and Frank had the touch. They had the ability to really see these really smart art films and get them released and see something which often other people didn't, you know, in terms of the actual end box office results. So it's an interesting time. I mean, Troy will keep that standard high. He always has. So, yeah. Very interesting.
And also interesting, I think, that Hopscotch being bought by Entertainment One and Hoyts being bought by Canal Plus, the consolidation, international consolidation of these companies, the chances of being able to really make a mark as an Australasian indie, it's just getting harder and harder, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but, when Hopscotch came along, I think they... I would argue that the purchase of Hopscotch is because it's a really successful distribution company that's taken some chances, but really had a good eye for the films, and they've just broken away and done very, very well. Whereas I think the other side of it that you're talking about there is maybe just, you know, you want to grab certain market share of distribution. Whereas I think, you know, Hopscotch is a I always considered their titles to be the premier titles that were coming through that you really wanted to try and get. So and that hasn't really changed, you know, not with one entertainment becoming involved. It hasn't really changed, which is interesting. I think it just gives them more flexibility to do what they want to do, you know, and get into production, which is the likes of films like Sapphires.
Well, that's right. And I mean they've had the ability to buy films off script and sign up sort of international or Australasian distribution rights before films have even been made. Like Troy's judgment has always been pretty exceptional.
It has.
In that case. The Sapphires is probably the biggest popular hit here at Telluride. That it wasn't one of the major tentpoles of the festival, but certainly the buzz around town. I didn't talk to anybody that didn't enjoy it, and they were all predicting big things in the US for it as well.
Yeah, well, I think casting the Irish comedian from Bridesmaids, I've forgotten his name now.
Yeah.
I think that was quite an astute move because it gives it that international flavour. If you'd cast an Australian actor in that role, it might have just been for that local market, whereas I think it has a real, really good, you know, shot at breaking out and going, doing well worldwide. I believe it'll do well in New Zealand. I think it'll do very well. So,
what's the release date for it in New Zealand?
What are we looking at? Hold on, I'm just looking at my
whiteboard. October 11th.
Looking at the whiteboard. Yeah, 11th of October. So,
Oh, good. So I'll be back.
And it's a fun, fun film. You know, just a really good roller coaster fun film.
Okay, and the last piece of news today. Terrence Malick's new film, To the Wonder, was booed by some critics at its first screening in Venice last week, although to be fair, there were some bravos in there as well. There's no word of a New Zealand release date for it yet, festival or otherwise, so we'll be waiting on
unless,
that.
Unless you guys know more than I do.
No, haven't heard. Have not heard.
Did the last one do enough business to do you think to justify a cinema release for another Terrence Malick film, or is it going to be festival only, do you think, Simon?
I think the last one was just down to dating in terms of the result.
Okay.
You know, I think it was a tough time of year that they opened it. So, hey, you got to see these things, don't you? And then you make those judgments.
And with audiences, some audience members feeling, you know, a bit burned by Tree of Life, they may not want to go to another Terrence Malick film. So,
they may
have given up on him.
But I mean, Tree of Life wasn't a disaster.
No, but you did have walkouts.
Yeah. But it wasn't, box office wise, it ticked along. It was just, I think it could have done a lot better at a different time of year than I think it came out just before Christmas or, you know, around about that date. And it's kind of tough to do it with those sorts of films. So if it had gone out in October or November, I think the results would have been a bit stronger. But, you know, it is a hard sell. But then they're the films that you need to have in the mix. You know, they're the ones that you do want common, you know, you can't just have sunny days every day, can you? You've got to have this mixture of things that unless I guess you're in the desert, but you know, like even then it'll change, but you've just got to have that mixture. And I see those sorts of films as really important as part of the overall, you know, jigsaw that you put on the screen.
Absolutely. I think any day when a Terrence Malick film is considered to be too risky to distribute or to release is a sad day. So I hope that, we will get a chance to see it. And, you know, it's got Ben Affleck in it. He's a movie star. So, you know, that can't be you've got to be able to sell it on that. Sure.
What do you know of hysteria?
Nothing.
But half the women in London are affected. It's a plague of our time.
I have just been offered a position by London's leading specialist in women's medicine.
Oh, no. It's a very difficult case, that one. Oh!
It must be difficult pleasuring half the women in the city.
Pleasure has nothing to do with it, I can assure you.
Well, I suppose that depends on whether you're over the table or on it.
That's a little bit of Hugh Dancy and Maggie Gyllenhaal in Hysteria, and our Victorian feminist correspondent, Kaylee.
Yes. Oh my goodness! For some reason, Dan, I'm thinking of Little Britain now, and I'm a lady, but it's not like that at all.
No.
Yeah.
This is actually really enjoyable. I wasn't quite sure what I was going to think about it, but I got swept away by Hysteria. I got swept up in the hysteria of Hysteria. So for those of you who don't know, Hysteria is starring Maggie Gyllenhaal and Hugh Dancy and Rupert Everett in a kind of jazzed up version of the invention of the vibrator, the classical ladies and men's now sex toy. So it follows Dr. Mortimer Granville, I can speak today, who actually did discover the vibrator, although didn't use it for pleasuring patients. He used it actually for muscular massage. So they have changed it a bit, but actually the correct doctor. And you know, there's a bit of a love story thrown in there. There's some sister drama. There's, you know, hierarchies going on. There's the rich versus the poor and morals versus money. And, you know, it was a great little film. Really funny. Not really camp or cheesy in any way. It was just a really, really good time.
I've thought a lot about this because, you know, it's, the question that goes through my head is, well, when somebody walks in the door and asks you about the film, what's it about? And the thing is that the actual risque part of it is actually a sideshow. It's not central to the film at all. It's light entertainment at certain times of the film, and that's it. It's about one, the romance, isn't it? And it's about women's empowerment. You know, and actually, you know, this is around the time when they're fighting for the vote and those types of things. It's about opportunities that women have. It actually has a lot of things that, you know, are quite, you know, it's a commentary on a lot of things. And I think it kind of in a funny kind of, you know, way, it you know, you're laughing away, but then it's also got these undercurrents, these little messages about women's rights. And I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a good film.
Mm.
I think it would make a really good double feature with Hope Springs.
Yeah.
Hopes. Yeah. Yes. Well, perhaps. I mean, yeah. But
They are. They're about women's sexuality and bringing it sort of front and center and acknowledging that it exists and that it's to be you know, taken seriously, and you know, I think that that they're both really important films, you know, in terms of being able to tell those stories on a big commercial screen.
Yeah, it is, and I mean, this I really like. I mean, I liked Hugh Dancy in it. I thought that he was really good. You know, he plays this kind of smart doctor or medical person who can't get the work. You know, they're still doing stuff. I mean, he's kind of, you know, forging ahead with all this new research, and these people are still, he can't get work because they're all stuck in their ways about how, you know, they're still bringing out the leeches, for example. You know, well, not really, but it's that sort of parallel, and he's saying, well, what about disinfectant and all these sorts of things, you know, and they're sort of sneering at it, so and he can't get work, and so this is where he eventually ends up sort of helping women sort of with hysteria, and that's quite comical in places, but then he meets this daughter and falls in, you know, well, he has a choice, doesn't he? There's two daughters of the head of the house, so to speak, and one's very kind of like formal and proper,
very British.
Yeah, and the other one is very sort of like into the, you know, feeding the poor and giving them free health and all these sorts of things. And
she's very modern, isn't she?
She is very modern. Yeah.
Yes.
And he has a real leaning towards the well, he takes the sort of the more certain path initially, anyway. But you know, as the romance develops and all those sorts of things that go through the film, you know, of course that changes. But I really enjoyed it. I thought all the actors sort of did a good job of knocking it off, and they were fun to watch, and it looked like a film which had a few messages. So. Or it is. It is a film that has a few messages.
Do you have two, so,
you have two words for us, Simon?
Jinx.
But you, Katie, this is your one, isn't it? Have you got your two words?
I'm going to go with Lady Liberation.
Nice. Yep. I'll stand by that.
I'll go next then, if you're still struggling, Simon. But I just wanted to say I really like Rupert Everett as well.
So he was brilliant.
And he's a great partner, doesn't he?
Got a thumbs up from me. And my two words are Joyful Noise.
Oh,
yeah.
Touché.
I'm with you guys on these. They're very good.
Musik kann daraus uns Freunde machen.
Anna, diese beiden Kinder sind Juden. Der Umgang mit ihnen ist nicht gut für dich.
Wenn die beiden Judenkinder ein fehlerfreies Konzert abliefern, dann werde ich mich dafür einsetzen, dass sie aus kulturellen Gründen am Leben bleiben.
Sie wollen die Kinder um ihr Leben spielen lassen?
That's Wunderkinder. Simon, you're our World War II musical prodigy correspondent for today.
Yeah, and, you know, I guess these types of films about, you know, the Second World War and how Jewish people were treated is you know, there's a deep vein of sort of stories that can be mined in films like this come along. And usually, you know, they're worthy of, they have to, you know, they're very relevant and need to be on the screen. And this film... is interesting in that it's set in the Ukraine, and it's about these musical prodigies. You know, these amazing classical musicians who there's this young boy and girl who you know are have big futures ahead. They're going to go to New York and play, and they're being touted as for big things. And it's, you know, at that point in time, it's a Russian. You know, the Russians are there, and it's. I guess, you know, there's a feeling of the state kind of managing things and looking after these kids and taking them off to the US to sort of showcase, you know, how amazing and talented their kids can be. And as to parallel this, there's a German family who live there who are actually the local beer producers. They've got a big factory, German factory there, or business making beer. And there's a young girl there who's also very talented. And they kind of meet and they bond and they play, you know, this wonderful music, and throughout the film, there's this wonderful music being played, and it's, you know, quite moving at times when that is, you know, happening. And but of course, things go a bit pear-shaped for the Germans. And what's interesting about that is that the local community, they kind of look after them. They say, look here, you know, here's a place where you can probably hide, and so on. And so they kind of bring them food and. There's this period where, you know, they're very fearful for their lives, and you know, it's when the Russia and Germany finally go head to head, and so they have to hide for a bit. But then, it all turns and it all goes sort of pear shaped for the local community once the Germans actually arrive, and this German family, you know, tries to reciprocate and look after these Jewish children, and it doesn't. You know, it, as with most of these films, there is some sadness to it, and it doesn't completely end well. But it's a very interesting story about these children and how they had to survive, and how at the core of it all was this complete passion for their music, and that's what bound them all together. These three kids from different backgrounds, different class, you know, different countries, and yet here was this theme that runs right through it, that is this bond, and it carries on for quite some time, you know, beyond the war. And so it is quite a moving film, you know, quite sad in places, but one that's worthy of being told and on the screen. So I thought it was, you know, a very interesting film, and again a film with a, you know, a fairly generic theme, I guess, but with a spin on it, which I quite enjoyed.
With a twist,
yeah, which I quite enjoyed.
Great. I haven't seen it, unfortunately, so I can't contribute to this. Do you have two words for us, Simon?
It's a lovely classical drama. There you go.
Brilliant. All right, and is that playing fairly wide around New Zealand, or is it
you know, like
just very select?
I think it's a limited release. I think, for example, in Wellington, I think it's playing in three locations. So
okay,
it's, you know, reasonably tight.
And well, it's we'll be interested to see how it does and how people respond to it. That is our show for this week. Next week, I'll be reporting from New York City, and our feature guest, entirely coincidentally, will be Lynn Shelton, the director of the new Emily Blunt comedy Your Sister's Sister. I'm talking to her on Friday for next week's show. Plus, we'll be reviewing the comedy thriller Hit and Run. Hopefully, one or two of you guys will get to see Finding Nemo in 3D, because it opens in New Zealand before it opens here in the States.
Oh.
Always ahead.
Possibly due to summer holiday or school holiday issues, or maybe not. Who knows? But either way, you're going to be ahead of me on that one. And we'll see what else we can come up with. All that and more in next week's exciting episode of New Zealand's favourite podcast, Cinematica. If you've enjoyed this episode, don't forget to click subscribe in iTunes or your own favourite podcasting software so the latest episode is always downloaded automatically. Please leave us your feedback at the iTunes store, or you can just get in touch with us direct via social media. Twitter us at CinematicaCast. Kayleigh, you monitor all of that stuff, and you're our voice on Facebook. Where would they find us?
Yes, if you go to facebook.com/CinematicaPodcast, you can find us there, and tell your friends, tell your mom, tell your dog. Join us in our little online community.
I've been handing out lots of business cards while I've been here, so it'll be interesting to see how many of the dedicated cinephiles here in Telluride are going to be downloading the show over the next couple of weeks.
Well, Dan, you've
this show is a Guns of Steel production. The theme music is 6x6 by Earl Van Dyke, and you can buy that at the iTunes store. We're going to leave you with a little bit more music. This is from the still amazing feature film Baraka, which screened in 70mm earlier on this weekend at Telluride. Fantastic music. The film itself hasn't dated at all, and I noticed that there's a follow-up to it going to be released here in the States before Christmas called Samsara, also directed by the same guy, and let's hope that gets a release in New Zealand sometime soon as well, because these films are absolutely extraordinary. Until next week, it's good night from me.
And good night from me. I think Simon has a question for you, Dan.
No, it's too late.
Yes,
it's gone. Too late. It's gone.
That's it. We'll catch you later, mate. Have a good time over there.
We'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Yep, talk to you soon.